No one knows what it's like to be the bad man, to be the sad man. Behind blue eyes.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Hope and Chris finish the last episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. Luckily, dependable Dave Filoni and crew create Rebels with new characters, new places, and new adventures, thus keeping hope alive for this podcast. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi.
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars Rebels. In this episode, as Blue Husbando Thrawn searches for the rebel spy intensifies, Ezra Bridger looks to extract Agent Kallus to bring him back to the rebel base. There will be Kallus and Ezra team-ups. Poor, stupid, dumb Lieutenant List, bless your heart. And holy shit, guys, those Thrawn arms. We are talking through Imperial Eyes this week. How you doing, Kreeus?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Thrawn did his kung fu this week.
Oh.
Whatever.
I love that scene.
Sure you did.
Yeah, you did. Twice. You got to fight robots twice, and it was great. How you doing?
Good.
Quarantine life treating you well?
Yeah. It's all a bit, except for the whole world being quiet around me, I'm getting work because I'm a food worker, so.
It's kind of funny. I saw what you said in the Two True Freaks Cantina of like, wow, everyone else is going down, but I'm like back to normal now.
Don't get me wrong. I am very happy that I'm not, like, wondering how I'm going to pay my rent, at least at first, you know, for now. Mm. But at the same time, I'm a little pissed because the whole reason Two True Freaks started is because it was during a recession and everybody was unemployed and hanging out at their house trying to get a job, collecting unemployment and making podcasts.
So I'm like, know that.
Yeah, I'm like, we're going to have another golden age of everybody's going to be at home. Everybody's going to have time to like record. The hell, they'll even have time to edit and stuff like that.
I will say that's been a very fascinating shift watching how, because if you know me from my Hope of All Trades days, watching how fandoms evolve and watching how media shifts and changes is something that really fascinates me. And watching how people are using like social media now, seeing musical artists doing concerts from their house, having Steve Martin playing a banjo in the woods. I mean,
learned to do that, but they've all learned to blog and stuff. What I've been enjoying is like the newscasters and stuff who suddenly have to become bloggers at home with their webcams. And I was watching some people who are like, these are people who are getting paid like, you know, 500,000 times our salary, whatever, to be newscasters and stuff. And I'm watching them do their live stream, and like whoever's on their Skype with them is garbling up, and I'm watching them, and I'm watching and I can see them. They got their browsers up, and they're, you know, They're doing that stuff, and it's garbling their Skype person, and I'm just like, what are you doing, you maroon?
Yeah, I was actually just saying that because they've been doing a lot of that on my local news too, because I'm an old woman and I watch local news a lot. And I just made the comment to my stepmom last night. I was like, man, we're getting to see the insides of everyone's houses. I wonder how much they had to clean for this. Like when they're
their
doing,
mics
like,
have crappy room echo on them and everything and stuff, and here we are sounding like the pros now.
I know, it's It's very interesting watching how everything is evolving. I was just talking to my friend last night about that. Like, how is this going to do something like affect the Oscars? Because you have movies now not coming to theater. They're going straight to streaming. And already, even before, not this year's Oscars, but the previous year's Oscars, when Roma was up for Best Picture, there were people like James Cameron's in here going, well, that's not a real movie because it's not in theaters. It was on Netflix. Well, now we have movies
that era is over.
we have movies that can't go to theater anymore. So are they going to qualify? Like, are those going to be part of it? It's going to be a very interesting to see how this shifts. But yeah, it's going to be very interesting. I'm having a theory that we're going to like see a rise in like esports, and we're going to see a shift from completely away from movie theaters and to just complete streaming now going forward. And people probably going to find that they like homeschooling more. I mean, so it's going to...
I don't know about that.
My friend Megan was homeschooled for her entire schooling career up until college. And she's like, oh, people are freaking out about homeschooling. Oh, no. Because, like, she was homeschooled her entire life until college, so it was never a problem for her. So... she's been kind of sarcastic about it, like, oh no, you're homeschooling, how dreadful. But quarantine life's good for me. I've been working a lot on the website. I had just posted two articles in the last 2 days. One was about Ahsoka Tano, and the other one was about Pixar's Onward, because I got to watch Pixar's Onward today, which was a really, really good movie. But there's one major problem I had with it, which was how they treated the mom's boyfriend. So you can see all that on Geeky Girl Experience. So I've just been really just pretty much working on the website, to be honest. And if you guys feel it in your hearts, you can also hit that Ko-fi button. That'd be great. Self-promotion. Speaking of Ahsoka, oh my god, have you seen the new episode?
I have.
So Ahsoka is back! I'm so excited for it. I miss her. I miss her so much all the time.
I thought it was a very good episode without saying too much about it. I think people should go read your Geeky Girl article on it after they should watch it and then read your Geeky Girl article. The only thing I'd have to add is Patrick Delmore pointed out that the two sister characters are... very much like Maggie and Hopi from an underground comic called Love and Rockets by the Hernandez brothers.
I need to read Love and Rockets. It's been on my to read list forever.
It's Maggie and Hopi aren't the only characters. It's an anthology, and it has a lot of characters mostly centering around or from a small, poor Mexican village. And a lot of the characters are Hispanic. Because the two writers and artists are that I think they interchange writing and drawing. I think they both draw and write, and they're very surreal, and they've always been considered very feminist and also having very like shaded, nuanced characters. But they're also kind of weird. They're also kind of fetishy. You know, I think. One of them kind of likes big wrestler sort of girls that can kick somebody's ass. I think he likes drawing them, but they're really good comics. They're often kind of surreal, but the Maggie and Hopi stories were usually very realistic, and I think they were set like in San Francisco, and they've over the years their characters have aged. Their characters are middle aged now, but they were like, you know, 1920 when the comic first started out, punk rock lesbian couple off and on. But I highly recommend it.
I Love and Rockets has been on my to read list forever. I just haven't been able to get my hands on it. I wrote an article on geekygirlexperience.com called The Queer Coding of Ahsoka Tano, and it was talking about the episode Gone with a Trace. And of course, by the time this episode that you're listening to right now comes out, we should be about done with the first Ahsoka arc. So we'll see how well it holds up. But pretty much it was discussing how Trace and Ahsoka are queer-coded, what queer-coded means, the possibility, the use of romantic tropes with Ahsoka and Trace, because they are setting up a lot of romantic tropes with them. And I also discussed a little bit, actually it's kind of ties into this episode because of Callus. I talked about how, not on purpose, I do not think it was on purpose. Let me say that now. I do not think it was on purpose. But how the Rebels cast and creators queerbaited us with Callus and Zeb. And so all that's on geekygirlexperience.com. You can go check it out there. And I'm also writing Clone Wars reviews. So yeah, just go check out my website. And if you feel it on your heart to hit that Ko-fi button, so that's totally fine too. Speaking of Callus, you ready to get into this?
I am ready.
Oh, by the way, I should say I really loved the Ahsoka episode. Really loved it. It was the gayest thing I've ever seen in Star Wars. It's so gay.
Oh, you think denim overalls are... I did, for one, I did not know they had denim in the Star Wars galaxy, but you learn something new every day.
I know.
Did not know they had Oshkosh B'gosh there.
Actually, there is, because Aunt Beru in A New Hope has that denim jacket she wears.
You're right.
Because I remember us talking about that when we did our A New Hope commentary. I was like, is she wearing a denim jacket? Right.
Canadian tuxedos exist in Star Wars.
I was actually talking with Jonna a little bit, and the thing that squeaked her out the most was the laundromat, because she never actually thought about them ever doing their laundry. She was like, people in Star Wars do their laundry? They don't just put it inside a box and it's clean 2 seconds later? What is this? She was like, why do they have laundromats?
No, that's more Star Trek than Star Wars, I would think.
Yeah, so I found that really funny. All right.
Star Wars, I picture them all wearing dirty whitey tighties.
Imagine Jabba's whitey, tidy whiteys. They'd be huge.
Tidy moisties.
Ugh. So, through Imperial Eyes?
Yes.
What'd you think of the episode? I know it's probably not your favorite. Probably didn't like it as much as I did.
I probably didn't like it as much. I haven't peeked at your score yet, but I doubt I did not like it. It wasn't. It's not the most egregious Thrawn episode, but I'll have things to say.
I know you will. I will let you know, Chris, I actually have a Thrawn criticism.
Ooh.
I know. I actually have a Thrawn criticism in this
Well,
one.
I'll have something nice to say about him by the end of the episode.
And I love my blue husbando, but sometimes he's not right. So I do have a Thrawn criticism. To give you an idea of how I scored this is one of my favorite episodes of Rebels. It's definitely in my top 10. So, here we go.
Okay.
Yay! All right, here we go. Through Imperial Eyes is the 54th episode of Star Wars Rebels, and it was released on January 25th, 2017. It was written by Nicole DeBook. I always misspell your name, I'm sorry. And Henry Gilroy, and it was directed by Saul Ruiz. Some extra information for you. Tom Kane reprises his role as Admiral Yularen. Actually, he's Colonel Yularen in this. That's wrong. From the Clone Wars. Kane was also the voice of the opening announcer and Yoda in Clone Wars. Keep that in mind, because I write announcer jokes this week. There are two callbacks to Legends Thrawn stories in this episode in Thrawn's office. His lizard statues are a nod to the Salamiri, the lizards that could repel the Force that were vital in his plot in the original Thrawn trilogy. His code to shut down his sparring droids is Rook. Rook was his Nogri henchman from Legend Stories who was Thrawn's bodyguard. Rook also becomes a character in Rebels Seasons 4. Also in Thrawn's office are items such as the Holy Grail from Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Harris Kalkori, and Clone Commander Gree's helmet, with Gree being the clone commander who tried to kill Yoda in Episode 3 during Order 66. Now, in Rebels Recon, they wouldn't actually confirm that it was Gree's helmet, but he is the only one to ever have that paint scheme on his helmet. And I think it was, I forgot who it was, the art director. He was just like, yeah, he was the only one ever to have this, so which we like to pretend it's Gree, wink, wink. Where am I? There's also a statue of an Abednego. I always have to stop and say that. Abednego alien statue. Before this episode, Abinettos had only appeared in The Force Awakens, so this made it their second canon appearance when this episode aired. There's also a Ralph McQuarrie drawing of Lothal on the wall, and it's the first time ever a Ralph McQuarrie piece has ever been used directly in Star Wars. Early planning for this episode, there were some conversations about doing the whole thing from a first-person perspective, but the approach would end up being far more complicated and the cost and cost more than the production schedule would allow. This, they also didn't have time to give Kallus a sleepwear model, which is why he wakes up in the beginning still wearing his armor. Dave Filoni in Rebels Recon laughed this off by saying Kallus is practical and always ready for action. The insignia on Thrawn's officer and trooper's uniform are a stylized chimera patch to show their loyalty to him. And this is a hope side note. Thrawn's crew and officers are so much fun to read and a great group of people who are actually nice Imperials who are good at their job. I suggest reading about them in the three Thrawn novels, the canon ones. My girl, Karen Farrow, who is not seen in the episode, is still during this time period, so technically she should be on the bridge while Thrawn's doing all this, and she's a total badass, and I love her. I highly suggest giving them a read if you want to know more about Thrawn's really loyal crew. Me and Megan jokingly call them the Kumbaya Chimera, because they all just get around, along together, and whenever they meet other people, are just like, ugh, they're happy. They're actually happy Imperials. Gross. So they're the Kumbaya Chimera. In the hallways of this episode, we see Captain Brunson from the Geonosian episode a few episodes ago, and Brom Titus from season 3 of the opening episode of the season. We also get Lieutenant List, who is a prominent character in the episode as he has dated back to season 1 of Rebels. They talked about this in Rebels Recon. Seeing these people is on purpose to show Thrawn's investigation into our Rebels and gathering information on them from Imperials who have interacted with our heroes before. A little background from the Thrawn novel. The novel shows the meeting and grown friendship between Yularen and Thrawn. They work together looking for a rebel leader named Night Swan. At one point, Yularen believed Thrawn was a traitor to the Empire, but Thrawn proved his methods weren't treasonous, and since then, Yularen and Thrawn have been great allies and friends. And finally, for Rebels Recon for this episode, they talk about how they reverse-engineered Colonel Yularen's character. He first appeared in A New Hope as an Imperial officer, but then they added him back into the Clone Wars as a Rebel fleet officer. Now they brought him back to who he is as an Imperial. Excuse me. He is the head of the ISB, a.k.a. the Imperial Security Bureau, a.k.a. think of it like the FBI or the CIA of the Empire. Dave Filoni explains that when Yularen saw the change from the Republic to the Empire, he didn't want to fight anymore, so Yularen went into intelligence and spy espionage over combat. Henry Gilroy states that Yularen was always a stickler for the rules, which we did see in Clone Wars in episodes like Cat and Mouse, which is why he went into the ISB. Not only is he helping with looking for rebels, we also know from the Thrawn novel that Yularen hunts down corrupt individuals in the Empire as well, so he goes after Imperials and rebels. Dave also states that Thrawn has been speculating that Kallus was Fulcrum, but Thrawn wanted to be 100% sure. Kallus's high rank holds power, and if Thrawn had been wrong, then there would have been consequences for being wrong. Pablo Hidalgo also added that Thrawn didn't want to go, "Ha, I got you." Those were his words. But Thrawn wants to go, "Okay, it's Kallus. Now how can I use him to my advantage?" And at one point, Henry Gilroy says, in relation to seeing Thrawn's training, Thrawn has, quote-unquote, honed himself as a weapon. And I snickered going, "Yeah, to fight the fangirls' hearts." You know who also fights fangirls' hearts? Hey, Yoda, how are you? You were sick last week.
Fangirls? Where? Hello, it's Yoda.
No one's here, Yoda. We're all
soft, cuddly Yoda.
All quarantined, Yoda. No one's here.
Lonely Yoda. The only lonely Yoda needs a hug.
I was about to say you sound better from last week, but no, I'm not so sure.
Yoda uses blow dryer on nose.
Oh, God.
Kills all the bad bugs.
No, people, please don't take medical advice from Yoda.
Dr. Yoda.
Well, I have a question for you this week that's kind of in with what we're talking about.
Dr. Yoda has tiny gloves with three fingers, yes.
Did you just have to quickly Google how many fingers does Yoda have, or did you
very
actually
very clean Dr. Yoda is. Good doctor. Good doctor.
You know, maybe I don't want to ask you a question this
a
week.
A question? A question for Yoda, yes.
I was just curious, because I know you were sick last week, and I was just wondering how quarantine life is treating you. Are you watching a lot of TV or movies? Like, how are you passing the time of quarantine life, Yoda?
Yoda watches a lot of pornography. Yoda watches, yes.
Hey, Pornhub's currently...
And puzzles. Yoda does puzzles, too.
Sexy puzzles?
One puzzle was... Oh, it was kitty cat hanging from a tree by... And it said, hang in there, baby.
Aww. That's actually really sweet, Yoda. Are you going to, like, frame the puzzle when you're done with it?
Sure. Yeah. Then Yoda saw a movie with 14 ladies in it. Yes. And 45 men in it. Yes. Yoda counted them all. Yes.
I would just imagine you, I'm sorry, of you, like, giving this, like, framed hang in there poster to Luke when he comes to train on Dagobah. Just like, here.
Aw, cheer up, Skywalker. Kitty cat.
And then Luke takes it and hangs it in the Jedi temple, and he's like, a great Jedi master gave this to me. It must mean something.
Haha, then meanwhile, Yoda burns his tree.
Oh no!
Burned your tree, did I?
The kitty poster is burned.
Oh, nice tree you have there. It'd be a shame if Yoda burned it down with lightning. Oh, dumb Skywalker.
Chris, remind me, I need to send you a Grievous video. It just dawned on me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Aaron Henley sent it to me, and he was like, please turn this to Chris. I just remembered it. Well, it sounds like you're keeping busy, Yoda, and you're having a lot of fun in quarantine. So I'm going to put you back in your quarantine box so you don't get me sick.
Oh, Yoda hates quarantine box, but okay.
Hey, that's okay, because Pornhub is now free in Italy.
I thought it was free everywhere.
Well, they're giving away premium.
Oh, jeez. Oh, hey.
Hey, yeah.
Here you go,
actually,
Italy.
This is a total side note for everybody. If you actually look into it, Pornhub is actually an amazing company who does a lot of, like, really good charity work.
Pornhub. Pornhub. I actually, for the first time, visited Pornhub. I've actually done research. I probably ended up on Pornhub before when I've been doing research for Eat It and Beat It, but I didn't know it. But I actually went to Pornhub because I found out they actually put out a real movie, but I couldn't find it. I thought they would have it in some special area or something. I tried searching the title of it, but like I read an article about it. It was it's been making the rounds of you know, film festivals and stuff, and it's a documentary about the like 1983 to 1988, and it was a lesbian strip club, a black lesbian strip club, and the woman who made it had just been filming there in the 80s from like 83 to for 5 years, you know, just going there and filming her and her friends there, and then interviewing people, and it's cut into a movie now. And boy, oh boy, I would love to talk about your like slice of, you know, a slice of life from a certain time period with a really like small, you know, a really like off, especially in like 1983, you know, it must be a really interesting movie. So I wanted to go check it out, but I could not find it. And I can't remember the name of it now off the top of my head.
Because
it was like a week ago. But yeah, they're like releasing real movies there, too.
Well, if you happen to know what movie Chris is talking about, don't leave a link in the comment. Just like message Chris. Please don't leave a link in our Facebook group with a link to it, please.
No, I mean, they were writing about it in regular press and stuff. You don't have to go to any sleazy quarters of the internet to find out about it. It's
It's going to go from Pornhub to the Criterion collection of movies. So there you go. It's classy. Mm-hmm. Like this show.
Yay, Pornhub. Endorse us.
Well, yeah, I imagine Yoda's on like Space Pornhub or something like that, or.
Hell, I'd own being endorsed by Pornhub. I have no shame. By the way, I just, you know, porn's great.
Pornhub wants to support us, I'll do ads for Pornhub. I don't care. I it would be more appropriate if they signed up for Eat It and Beat It, but I'll take whatever I can get. Well, we've got Yoda here, too. Yoda would be a good mascot for Pornhub, although probably not a legal mascot for Pornhub. Probably not a very good copyright one, but in spirit, yes.
If you want a fun alternative to Pornhub, there's a wonderful web comic called Oh Joy Sex Toy that I read every Tuesday. And it's an educational but really fun comic about, like, all sorts of topics and stuff like that. Highly recommend them. All right, yeah. Now that we've...
Probably not as much material as Pornhub, but there you go.
They've been running. They have enough to... They've published 4 books of it already, so...
No, literally video porn sites?
Oh, yeah, I know.
If you took all the video on video porn sites, this is a real fact.
Please remember
this. It takes up more time than human history.
Oh, I know.
There is more porn on the interweb right now than if you just, like, sat all the way through human history watching it. You couldn't watch. You would still have porn left over.
Oh, I know.
Let that sink in, America.
We are really getting our classy on today.
Yeah.
Anyway, Callus. Act 1.
Really makes you think of a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. They were still watching Pornhub.
Act 1. Okay. Act 1. We open in a rare first-person perspective where we're on an Imperial Star Destroyer. Actually, it's a light cruiser now I think about it. We were having lovely dreams about Lasat boyfriends, but the blaring alarms wake us up. We go over to the door where a stormtrooper tells us that we need to get to our battle stations. We close the door, watch the sink, and look in the mirror. We are Callus. Not in a We Are Groot kind of way, though.
No, more in a kind of what am I doing with my life kind of way, but yeah.
we are all existential crisis Callus right now. Callus goes to the bridge of the ship, and there's Lieutenant List trying his very best to be a big bad Imperial. There's a shuttle that their TIEs are chasing down outside. List gets the tractor beam and pulls the ship in. Callus goes to check it out. And when they pull a masked kid inside the ship, the troopers remove his helmet. And we see that the person they've captured is Ezra. And Callus is just like, great. Just great. This is going to be a wonderful day. As the troopers take Ezra to the detention cell, another one finds Chopper in AP-5 on Ezra's ship. Chopper is painted to look like an Imperial droid, and AP-5 is just like, oh wait, my AP-5 voice, oh no, it was horrible. That blueberry kid kidnapped us, and woe is me. And Chopper is like, yeah, what he said. And they're told to stay with the ship until they can be processed. In the detention level, they shove Ezra into a jail cell, and Callus is all calm and collected as he tells the other troopers to leave. He shuts off the cameras, and he goes into the room, and the moment the door shuts, Callus is like, what the hell? What the hell? What in the actual hell are you doing here, you little shaver? Oh my god! What the hell, Ezra? And Ezra explains that most Imperials don't actually know what he looks like, and he's also there for a very good reason. They think the Empire is on to Callus, so Ezra's there to bust Callus out of there. Both Callus and Ezra don't trust each other, thinking that the other one could be setting them up. But they have to put that aside and trust each other now. Suddenly, they hear List outside the door, and Ezra quickly falls over like, oh no, Agent Callus, you are too good at your job. I will tell you everything. And precious little Dom Lieutenant List is like, "Wowee, Callus, you're amazing. But we're going to have to wait. I got a message from Blue Husbando. Thrawn wants to see us. You bring this Lothal guy with you, who I don't recognize as Ezra Bridger because I'm dumb, and even though we've known each other since season fucking one, this is going to get me a promotion." And Callus is like, "Jesus fucking Christ, List, you're going to get me killed by being an idiot." And they leave, but Ezra's helmet is left behind in his jail cell, which this is a plot point for later. Remember that. Ezra's helmet. They load Ezra Chopper and AP-5 onto the shuttle and head to Thrawn's ship, the Kumbaya Chimera. List is all nervous because he wants to make a really good first impression. The whole Leia episode from season 2 was a very bad look for him. They arrive, and List hands over Ezra to some of Thrawn's stormtroopers while going, "Look, guys, look! I caught a rebel! I'm a good boy! Look how good I am! Tell Thrawn that I'm a good boy, Lieutenant!" And they take Ezra away. Chopper and AP-5 need to update their status to the other rebels. And they call Kanan and Grunkle Rex, who are in hyperspace, to their position. Things are harder now with Thrawn there, and they need to rethink their strategy. Anyway, List and Callus head towards Thrawn's office, where they pass Brunson and Titus from the last few episodes. And Lieutenant List is like, "Oh my gosh, they're so cool! I'm really nervous here!" And Callus is like, "Good God, keep it together, man!" And they arrive at Thrawn's office, but before they can go in, they have to have their code cylinders analyzed. And Callus sees the code cylinders like, "Hey, that's an idea." And then, when they go inside, Blue Husbando is sparring with some robots, and he got his arms out, suns out, guns out, am I right, guys? And he's all sweaty, and he's hot, and look at his muscles, and every time he takes a punch, there's a little chiss-hiss, chiss-hiss! Oh my god! God freaking damn Rebels! The creators know what I like! Thank you! Thank you, Rebels creators! I will always love you! Ah! Thrawn arms and chiss-hitting and fighting, and I love it! Guys, I literally watched this scene like 5 times today while I was writing the outline, and I've already watched this scene like 100 times before. Anyway. Anyway. Calm down. It's fine. Anyway, List is like, "Damn, I think I'm gay now." And Callus was like, "Well, I was already pretty gay for Lasats, but you can add Chiss to my list now, too." The door to Thrawn's main office opens, and there's Constantine, King of Hubris, first of his name, who's there to greet them. But Constantine is not alone. With him is Colonel Yularen from the Clone Wars, who's actually looking really great in his old age. Callus sees Yularen, he's like, "Wowee! You were my favorite teacher in ISB school." And Yularen is like, "You were my..." Oh, I'm sorry, I must do a Yularen voice. Yularen is like, "You were my best student. It's really great to see you again, Agent Callus. Betrayal." Sorry. And Thrawn kicks in the door. Now he's wearing a shirt. And Thrawn is like, "Hey guys, it's time to find out who Fulcrum is. What'd you think of Akron?"
It was okay.
I mean, while I'm over here trying not to have a stroke from Thrawn.
I'll throw some cold water on that right away. I remember seeing this the first time and being just like, well, okay, Thrawn's a badass now. Also, he's a badass kung fu guy, too, so he can fight, too, if he has to. And it never really... I mean, there's a couple places where Thrawn uses his fighting... is physical, like, towards the very end of the show, but it's just more like just surface stuff on Thrawn of making it's more of just the look of a badass rather than... I just don't feel the badass on him. I'm sorry, Hope. Sorry.
He can have my badass.
Anyway, what? my what? Notes. The point of view's really neat at the beginning. This is the second point of view recently. We had a Chopper point of view recently, too.
I haven't known about that, too.
It's a little video gamey, but it's kind of cool. I'm not saying that as, like, a critique. It just reminds me of, like, cutscenes in some video games sometimes. for some reason, Callus just makes me think he's sort of the Imperial version of Obi-Wan. He there's something about his demeanor that's very Obi-Wan about him for some reason. I just get a Obi-Wan vibe off him.
You know what the first thing that just popped in my mind when you said that? When Obi-Wan is undercover on Mandalore looking for Satine and he's wearing that armor and he's having to act his way through the whole thing, that's the scene that popped in my head when you said that. And they were both very similar types, like kind of just playing everything and playing off whatever was happening and just kind of rolling with the punches until they got what they wanted.
Yeah. So he's just got... And my only other note is something that's new in the Disney movies that I kind of like... And it makes more sense in the sequel trilogies, I guess, because the First Order is a lot more brand new type of thing. But I like the in Rebels and in the sequel trilogies, I call them the "I'm a big boy" rebel or "I'm a big boy" Imperials. You know, they're you know, before that, Imperials were just generally all sort of like Tarkin. They were gristled, old, grumpy, Nazi sort of guys and all seemed competent. But now we've got like a lot of, you know, like Hux is the standard character in the sequels. But, you know, we've got a lot of like young Imperials that are just sort of like, I got the rebels here, Thrawn, you know, and I like that because there would be people like that, you know, and that are kind of dumb and inexperienced and doofy and probably some of them maybe not meant to
belong really, to this world.
Maybe not really meant for that the job of evil Imperial in
you
the
know,
first
though,
place.
I remember us talking about that in the place of Oresco and Grint in season one, the two really dumb Imperials from in season one.
Yeah.
And I remember you mentioning that it's important for the Empire to have dumb people like that because they don't question anything and they just follow orders blindly.
Yeah. You get a lot of goons,
yeah.
Basically. people who are in their... to abuse their power, you know. They're there to be bullies, you know. They were picked because they're bullies. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And these guys, the officer ones, are more like little skinny weak boys, you know, that just came out of like some sort of, you know, training school and
but they went to like the rich fancy training school that their parents paid for,
right, some sort of prep school type or military academy type of thing, you know, so they've been able to pay their way out of the physical training, so they're all like the sort of eggheads of the Imperials.
Oh my god, I've been watching so much.
They just want to be evil bureaucrats for their whole life.
I've been watching a lot of The Crown recently, and Liz just very suddenly when we said that reminded me of so many characters in The Crown. And I like one time. So
yeah, I think really it's been an underrepresented character type in Star Wars, and I'm glad to see him on board. All the little dumbasses. But that's all I got for notes.
Also, The Crown is a really good show, guys. You should check it out on Netflix. It's so good. For my notes, the opening of this episode is one of my absolutely favorite openings of the show. I also love seeing that moment where Callus is alone and he looks in the mirror. For a very brief moment, he looks really vulnerable. And then he kind of nods and he puts on his game face and he looks really tough again. It's so brief. It's maybe a couple seconds long, but like when he first looks up into the mirror, he looks very vulnerable. And then he purses his lips and he looks tough, like he's putting on his game face. And I really love that moment. It's like we've said,
they've got to humanize him if they're going to make him into a good guy character. So this is just a nice little touch into that direction.
So my next note is about Lieutenant List. Bless his heart, I love him. I love Lieutenant List, guys. He's so dumb. But I actually have to kind of criticize how dumb he is in this episode. Because the episode opens on List's ship, when List is stationed over Lothal. And other than Callus, List is the one Imperial left that's been dealing with Ezra's group the longest. He's been around since season one. And Ezra says most Imperials don't know what he looks like. But List's men should know what Ezra looks like.
They've got hollows of all of them now by at this point. You know, they've identified and, you know, there's been several times where people have said, I know who you are, Ezra Bridger, you know.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
And this is just like, has List not been looking at those? Has he not told his men about those? And if he was actually good at his job and his men knew who Ezra was, Ezra should have been recognized right away and thrown in jail. And then you have the scene where List walks into Ezra's jail cell and he sees Ezra's face. And I'm sitting here going, you know what Ezra looks like, List. You saw him in Fight or Flight. You know what Ezra looks like, you idiot. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but, well, there's more of that in this episode, as I'm sure you're going to point out later.
Yeah, though I will say, the only defense I do have for this is List has not seen Ezra's face since season one. And Ezra looks drastically different than he did in season one. Like, he's taller, his hair's different, his face is different, he has scars now on his face. Like, he looks very different than what he looked like in season one. And the last time they were together in season two, Ezra had... It was in the Leia episode, where List was in the Leia episode, but Ezra wore a mask the entire time, so List never saw his face. So that's the only way I can justify this, is he hasn't seen Ezra since season one, and he hasn't seen his face since then. But even then, List, you should know what Ezra looks like.
Kind of your job. Yeah.
It is his job. I'm going to use this in the very southern way. Lieutenant List, bless your heart. Bless your sweet, sweetheart, honey.
He does the best he can with what he's got.
Oh, he's so dumb. I love him. I have so many Lieutenant List notes. I love him. He's so stupid. My next note is, I like seeing Rex and Kanan paired up again as stormtroopers. It's a nice callback to Stealth Strike from season two. Now for my first Thrawn note of this episode. It's about the sparring scene. So... I actually love that scene, besides the obvious reason of, oh my god, Thrawn arms. I like that scene for Thrawn as a character because it's a power play move. Because we just saw Brunson and Titus in the hallway leaving his office, and he's immediately fighting some robots before Kallus and List come in. But the thing is, we know Yularen and Constantine are in the next room. And at first, it's really odd to have like a very quick workout session when you have two guys waiting for you in the next room. But then I realized that is, he wanted them to see that. He wanted List
to see that. Yeah, that was purposeful. Yeah.
It's a move for intimidation. And I like that as a way to try and intimidate them. And it's a way to show that Thrawn is capable and he's not fucking around anymore. And
I thought that exact same thing.
Yeah, because, fuck, Yularen and Constantine are, like, 20 feet away, like, waiting for them. And it's just a weird time to have. I just love that conversation of, like, him getting up and, like, start taking off his shirt. And Constantine's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm going to go fight some robots before Kallus gets here. And Yularen and Constantine are like, what? I like to imagine what that conversation was like. And Constantine's like, okay, well, go fight some robots then. Have fun. So... But I love that power play move. That's the more I think about it, like it makes sense here. So, and my only other note I have is about Yularen. I remember the very first time I saw this episode and I saw Yularen in that Imperial outfit. I had a very negative visceral reaction to it. I actually remember typing on Twitter, did you forget your Jedi friends, old man? Because I was like, how could he forget the Jedi? You know, he fought with them. Why is he doing this? But the more I thought about it, and now when I watch this episode, I actually really like this, of Yularen being in this place. And I like his move from military to the ISB. And a lot of that was Thrawn novel, because they made a lot of Yularen's like background with the ISB make sense. But being in the ISB is actually a very smart move for him, because it keeps him from actively hunting people. And he doesn't have to hunt the people that he used to serve with. And with the ISB, because the ISB enforces the rules of the Empire. So he's actually just looking for rule breakers, whether or not they're rebels or Imperials. And it keeps him off the front line, so he doesn't have to risk, say, running into Obi-Wan Kenobi, who is someone he used to work side by side with. And it still keeps him very much in character because Yularen has always been a stickler for following the rules. And now his job is finding people who are breaking the rules of the Empire. So I actually really love this character move for Yularen. It makes sense. And honestly, it keeps him in a job, you know, when you work in the military and there's a change of power. He just kind of rolled with that. But he also chose a path to where he wouldn't, like I said, have to like one day face off against Obi-Wan or something.
Yeah, he took the path of least resistance.
Yeah. So I love it. I love Yularen. Kind of sad he blows up on a Death Star. He's the only good man. I know. He's the only good guy in that room. Yularen, one of these days.
Fuck around and find out, Yularen.
It's going to be, I have to be a very carefully written piece. But one of these days, I do want to either write a piece or do a podcast about good Imperials. People who are actually good people who work for the Empire. And this is for people like Yularen, or Sianna Ree, or Eli Banto, or Tam's grandfather that we hear about in Resistance. Like, people... Yeah,
and how they're still not good people, though.
and that's where it's difficult, because some of the people, like, in the instance of Tam's grandfather, you know, he worked for the Imperials to put food on the table.
Almost anybody can... That's the thing, is you can humanize almost anybody. I've worked for awful people. Awful people. That... You know, racist, sexist, greedy, rude. But, you know, you work with them for a couple years and you know them as a person, you know, so you know their foibles. You know that, like, all right, they're an asshole, but they, like, have issues, you know, that make them like that, you know, and you see them as a human. Didn't make me like them per se, but it made them likable and human, you know, and relatable, you know.
Yeah.
So and that's it, almost anybody, you know.
And that's where it's difficult to like write something like that, because it in a way like you have to be careful to make it like not framed as like, oh, the Empire has good people, so therefore it's good, and there's good and bad people on both sides, which is a very common theme of Star Wars. Of like that is the basis of Clone Wars. There are good and bad people on both. There are heroes on both sides, and that's in a crawl of one of the original trilogies, isn't it? There are heroes on both sides. But it's just so difficult, because in no way do you want to defend the Empire, but in any kind of bad government, there are good people who are just trying to do the best they can with the situation given to them. And I think it'd be a really fascinating but very difficult podcast and or article.
Well, there's lots of people who go with the flow who don't notice they're doing evil. You know, that's the whole point, is Yularen doesn't think he's doing evil. He's just doing his same job.
Yeah.
That he did before.
And when you see someone like...
He didn't have to change sides. The business changed around. Corporate had a shift around, but you know, so he changed his jobs and stuff, and there's some, you know, the Jedi are just like some ex-employees who, you know, hey, I got along with them, but you know, they went wrong with corporate, so what are you gonna do? there's a lot of that, you know.
I always think of people like Eli Vanto from the Thrawn novels. Honestly, he's just looking to do his job. You know, his parents own a trucking company.
There's always good people in any military that's doing bad things, you know?
Yeah, and like Eli Vanto's parents pretty much run a trucking company, and they wanted him to go to the Empire to get more skills. That's why he joined the Empire, was to get a job. And then he got wrapped up in Thrawn stuff, and Thrawn was like, hey, you're really good at this. Come, I'm going to steal you now. And Eli got wrapped up in all the stuff. And so, like, it's a pipe dream of mine to write, but it's one of those things that you have to do gently and carefully and correctly, so, one day. Anyway, that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, Act 2.
Act 2. Let me put this, I'm playing with a pair of fingernail clippers, so I'm going to put that down. So, Act 2. So all the baddies in Kallus are meeting in Blue Husbando's office, and Thrawn is like, alright, look here team, we have a traitor in our ranks, and this spy is making us lose. And dear old Lieutenant List stands up going, I will single-handedly find them because I'm a good boy, sir. And Thrawn is like, God, sit down before you hurt yourself. Yularen is taking care of this. And Yularen pulls out his best Mad-Eye Moody impression, going, constant vigilance, trust no one. And Thrawn says it's important to find the spy because he's narrowed down the possible worlds where the rebel base of Adalon might be. Constantine, King of Hubris, is like, that's impossible. How did you, of all people, figure that out? And then Thrawn gives his Sherlockian answer, and Constantine has some disgruntled British noises. And Thrawn dismisses them. Outside, Yularen is like, Kallus, you've dealt with these rebels a lot. Any thoughts? Oh, wait, that's Yularen. Sorry, not Lys. Yularen. Outside, Yularen is like, Kallus, you've dealt with these rebels a lot. Do you have any thoughts? And Kallus is like, oh my god, gay panic. The Lysaat is not hot, sir. And they trade back and forth possible ideas of the spy. And Kallus says that he will, quote unquote, help them out. Outside, Kallus and Lys meet back up. They stop in the hallway and go, is it getting colder in here to you? It's like a chill is coming over everything on the ship. And they turn the corner, turn the corner, and waiting for them is my baby girl, my bitch wife, Arinda Price. Hey, evil girl, hey. And Arya's like, Agent Kallus. You can't see it, I just kicked my leg in the air. Kallus, I hear you got a rebel captured. I would love to torture them if that's okay with you. And Kallus puts Lys front and center to give him all the credit. And Lys and Ahri are both surprised by this. And Ahri moseys on her way. Kallus leads Lys away and puts his arm around Lys to swap out their code cylinders while planting in Lys' head that Governor Price is probably the rebel spy. And Lys is like, oh, that's why she wasn't in the meeting. Oh, gee whiz. I will watch her every move. And Kallus is like, there's a good man. And he watches Lys stalk off after Ahri. And Kallus is like, geez, he's crazy. He's so dumb. Ahri goes to Thrawn's office and is like, hey, future boyfriend. I keep kicking my leg out into the air. How's it going? And Thrawn is like, hey, murderer, who I will never date because you're an evil psychopath that killed 10,000 people in my novel. I'm pretty sure that one of the people I interviewed is the rebel spy. And Yularen turns to the camera and goes, distrust! The Imperials seek out a spy in their midst. Will our villains are aware that a coded rebel message was sent to a ship on the way here now. Will they question the prisoner in the detention level? And Arya's like, who is he talking to? And Thrawn explains, oh, that's his Clone Wars voice. He does that from time to time. You get used to it. Let's go talk to a prisoner. Down in the detention block, Kallus heads to Ezra's cell to find Chopper and AP-5 outside it. He uses Lys' code cylinder to turn off the cameras and open Ezra's cell. They debate what to do because Rex and Kanan need clearance codes to land on Thrawn's ship. Kallus also wants to know where the rebel base is before Thrawn figures it out. Well, Ezra doesn't trust him enough with that information. Kallus wants to delete the planet from the database, though. AP-5 interrupts that if they break into Thrawn's office, then they can get clearance codes and delete Adalon from the database. Kallus calls up Lys, who lets them know that Thrawn is heading their way. Excuse me. They all leave to find Ezra a disguise, which is very gay, because Kallus kind of looks at him and goes, we need to find you a disguise. Guys, and I'm like, Kallus, he is underage. Stop. Thrawn, Yularen, and Ahri arrive to find the cameras turn off, and Ezra's gone. Lys' cylinder was the last one to open it, and Thrawn puts on his Tim Curry voice from the movie Clue and says, Lys is a red herring. I'm having fun with this. Leave me alone. Back with the heroes. I hope it makes sense. Back with the heroes. They leave AP-5 behind to keep watch. Kallus instructs Ezra to do the magic hand thing and convince the guard that he's Lieutenant Lys and to hand over code cylinder to the guard. Ezra uses the force and the guard lets them into Thrawn's office. Inside, Ezra wants to take back Harris Kalikori, but Kallus stops him since it would give them away. Chopper gets the clearance codes and sends them to Kanan and Rex. They pull up the star map and see that Thrawn is, in fact, close to finding their rebel base. So they erase Adelon and put in a brand new planet. Come on, guys. It's Thrawn. He's probably memorized all those planets. More on that later. Suddenly, AP5 calls in that Thrawn's on his way back and is at the door. Kallus, Ezra, and Chopper rush to hide. When Thrawn finds out that quote-unquote Lieutenant List is inside, he tells the troopers to have their weapons ready, and they go inside his office. Ezra has no choice but to hide behind a piece of art. He's now trapped in an office with Thrawn. Ba-ba-bum. What did you think of Act 2?
Not bad.
Did all that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Sometimes when I do like funny jokes and voices, I'm like, I hope someone gets this.
I think I got that this was in part two here. But my only note is, it's just funny. Whenever anybody's hanging around with a Jedi, all they want to do is get them to do tricks.
Do the magic hand thing, baby. The magic hand thing.
The magic hand thing. They love the Jedi mind trick, and it's just funny. It's always somebody's just like, oh, I'm with a Jedi. Do that Jedi thing. That's cool. And I imagine, you know, people would really do that. I would do that.
I would do that.
I want to see somebody throw somebody across the room or pick up something or control their brain. That's all I really had for part two, though.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, it was. I kind of wasn't buying the sneaking around in Thrawn's office. I just don't see Thrawn's office being that easy to mess around in. You know what I'm saying? That the whole plan of like we go into Thrawn's office sounds like we go into the room filled with bombs and gasoline, and here's a match to look around. It just seemed like a kind of sketchy plan. But
I have a note sort of about that in Act 3.
That's all I got, though.
All right. My first note is in regard to the meeting that they're having at the beginning that has Constantine, Kallus Yularen, Thrawn, and List. And List has that moment where he stands up and he's like, I'm going to find the rebels for you, sir. And Thrawn's like, okay, sit down. That scene. It's for me, it's kind of easy to see how Kallus put List in a position to make List look like the spy. Because List is so over-eager to please, to where it could be seen as overcompensation by people who don't know List very well. So somebody could be like, List isn't the spy, but why is he acting so over-eager to find the spy? Right. So I like how they wrote List to make it seem like he's trying to overcompensate to hide that he is the quote-unquote spy. So I like that, how they wrote him. I also wrote List is so dumb, and it's cute, endearing, dumb guy kind of way, and I love him. He's so dumb. And
well,
I
that also works good into setting him up, too, because, like, dumb and overeager would be a way to compensate if you were a dumb guy and were the spy.
Yeah.
But then again, spy's been getting away with it a long time, which isn't dumb, so.
Uh-oh. Yeah, which is what they point out in Act 3, because they're just like, oh, well, this is stupid. What? He's not capable of doing this. My next note is in regards of the scene. After they have the meeting in Thrawn's office, there's that scene where Kallus and Yularen step outside and they have a talk together. I like how they write Kallus's position in regards to Yularen. Because you have Kallus's spy side, where he's a double agent, he's trying to help the rebels. But he also has an emotional side to all that. We can tell that he respects Yularen, and he looks up to him, and he has a soft spot for his old teacher. And Yularen knows Kallus too, and they have a very positive relationship together, and it's hinted that they had a very positive history together. So I like seeing that scene because you know Kallus is having to portray somebody who he really clearly respects. And it kind of adds a little extra layer there of him going, I really like Yularen, but I don't like the Empire, so I'm going to have to backstab somebody I like.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's the first time that we've actually had to see him do that, and I like that about it.
Has to deal with the disappointment of a father figure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really well written. I have a short note that says, I love when the show does new team-ups. I really enjoy watching Kallus and Ezra together because they have a really fun dynamic. It's like Kallus is babysitting for the first time, and he's just like, what are you doing? I like
but at the same time, Ezra's humiliated and defeated him a bunch of times, so.
Yeah. So, I like them. And my only other note I have for this section is, I keep having to course correct my points from when we did our discussion about the honorable ones last season. I had said in that episode that I didn't think Kallus got held accountable for his actions earlier in the show. But now that we're rewatching this and we're getting into season 3 and we've been going episode by episode, I'm seeing more and more that he is being judged for that. Like, he is being held at an arm's length. And especially here, because we see that Ezra doesn't trust him. He's not going to trust him with the location of their base. He doesn't trust Kallus, and he's afraid that he even says, like, how do I know that you're not going to backstab me? And Kallus goes, how do I know that you're not going to backstab me? And I like that, because they both have very, very good reasons not to trust each other. So sometimes, you know, I enjoy being wrong. I feel like the more and more we're going through season 3, I'm seeing how wrong I was when we had that discussion about Kallus and the honorable ones, which I'm totally okay with being wrong.
Yeah, so, I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah, and so much of it is that since now that we're going through Rebels with a fine-tooth comb, I'm seeing it more now. So I'm actually, like, really appreciating how mm-hmm. they're writing Kallus, and that the Rebels are keep holding him accountable for his past actions.
Yeah, it's a little smoother the second time, for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's really well done, so. But that's all I have for Act 2. Did you have anything else?
Nope. Ready to...
quarantine the puppy and wrap it up?
Quarantine the puppy in a box.
And wrap it up? Yep. All right, let's wrap this puppy up. Act 3.
This puppy.
Act 3. So Ezra is trapped in an office with Thrawn with some stormtroopers. As Thrawn checks over the planet map, Kallus is in Thrawn's sparring dojo and is messing with Thrawn's robots. Everything appears to be okay. Until the robots storm in there and they take out the stormtroopers. Thrawn is all like, special code word, Rook. But the robots are like, nah, bro, we don't listen to you anymore. And we get our second sexy fight. As Thrawn takes out the robots, and he's jumping around like an action hero, he's weaving, he's dodging, and he finally takes out a blaster and goes all Rambo on them, shooting the shit out of the robots, be still my heart. And at the end of it, he calls Colonel Yularen, going, girl, you don't know what just happened to me, but I gotta tell you something real important. And I guess it's important to say that Kallus, Ezra, and Chopper snuck out in the middle of that fight, but I was paying attention to the fight. So, but they got out of the room, it's fine. Kanan and Rex arrive and move in to land in the hangar. But Thrawn and Yularen are onto them, and Yularen sends Arinda down to meet with Kanan and Rex. Ezra and Kallus see her too as they reach the hangar bay. And Ari is like, well, hello, troopers! I know that you're rebels. I'm going to arrest you and have the best time torturing you. Yes! You can't see it, but I'm doing like a 90s anime laugh with the back of my hand stuck to my chin. Wait, that's not coronavirus. You shouldn't touch your face, guys. Anyway, when Kanan tries to do the magic hand thing on Price, she tells her trooper to stun them. Kanan goes down, but Rex shoots the guard. And it's Price versus Grunkle Rex. Ding, ding! Let's get ready to rumble! But luckily, good old dumb Lieutenant List is watching. And List is like, Price is fighting that stormtrooper! Oh no, she must be the traitor! And Yularen is watching the entire thing unfold from above. Kallus and Ezra run into the fray while the brawl of the century is happening of Governor Bitchwife throws hands with an old man. And just as Ari is about to murder Rex and add him to her kill list, good old Lieutenant List stuns her. And List is like, yes, I caught the spy. Hooray. I'm really a big boy Imperial now. You're a big
Yay,
kid now.
You used my phrase and I didn't even know it.
I'm a big Imperial now.
You know, I'm a big boy now.
Yay! I lost my spot. Where am I? There I am. Yularen sees this and leaves his post, missing how the rest of the scene plays out. List is like, "Take that, you rebel scum!" And Ezra arrives at the shuttle going, "Damn, boy, you dumb! Bye!" He and Rex get Kanan on board and the droids, and they get on the shuttle. And List still doesn't recognize Ezra, because he calls him the shuttle thief, and he's not like, "Oh my god, you're Ezra Bridger." He's like, "No, the shuttle thief. Oh my god, List." And And Kallus runs in there, disarms List, and knocks him out. Switching back their cylinder codes, Kallus tells the rebels that he's staying behind. He can do more good here, even if it will probably get him killed. And he gets full mad respect from Ezra. The rebels fly away to safety, and Kallus pulls upon his Academy Award nominated voice actor, David Oyelowo, and he acts his ass off as Yularen runs in there. And Kallus dramatically grabs List, going, "You traitor! You're the rebel spy? I trusted you!" And List is like, "What's happening, guys? I'm so confused! Kallus, I'm scared! What's happening?" And they drag List away to never be seen again in the series, which is really sad because I love him. R.I.P. Lieutenant List, I miss you already. All the baddies meet up at Thrawn's office to show that they have all the information that would pin everything on Lieutenant List. Thrawn dismisses Kallus, Constantine, and Ahri. But when he's alone with Yularen, Thrawn is like, "Hey, bro. That was way too easy." And Yularen is like, "I know, bro! Super easy! To quote a great man named Han Solo, how convenient!" And Yularen flat out says that List isn't capable of being a spy, aka even Yularen thinks List is an idiot. Poor Lieutenant List. Hey guys, remember back in Act 1? Remember the helmet that Ezra left behind in the jail cell and I said that it's important? Well, here it is. It's back again. Thrawn takes one look at it and goes, "That helmet belongs to Ezra Bridger because the paint scheme is by Sabine Wren. The man in the hangar getting away was Ezra, and Kallus knows what Ezra looks like. Therefore, Kallus lied to us, and he's the Fulcrum spy." And Yularen is like, "Betrayal! My star student! No, I cannot believe this!" But Thrawn isn't too worried. He has plans for Agent Fulcrum to sniff out the rebel base. And Kallus very suddenly gets a chill down his spine because he knows that some shit is about to go down before the end of the season. The end. My god, Yularen voice makes my throat hurt. Betrayal!
I'm not sure that Thrawn's logic, I mean his logic is right, but I don't think it's, if I was Yularen, I'd be like, okay, it's not rock solid, but okay. But...
I don't agree.
I watched this episode back to back with the new Clone Wars, and they both like sort of turned into comedy. Like Clone Wars had that scene where Ahsoka beats up the thugs. It's just kind of a nice little comedy scene. And this one devolves into flat out Three's Company plot line where everybody sees something and they misunderstand it into a different situation, which works out for our heroes. It's sort of a comedy of errors of like, you know, setting up of List getting set up for the fall in the whole thing, and List is thinking that Price is everybody's misreading everybody else's actions and intentions,
and then you get to Yularen and Thrawn and they're like, "How convenient, too yep. convenient."
Yep, that's when it turns Scooby-Doo and they pull the mask off and go, "Look, it was Kallus all the time."
But, and Kallus is like, "I would have gotten away with it too if it wasn't for you rebels or Imperials."
But my only other note, and this is a note that runs all through Star Wars, is Imperial security, all technology is so inconsistent in Star Wars. It's like, all right, so you can switch someone's ID cylinders, but you'd think they'd be able to, like, run a video outside. You know, you'd think they'd have a security... Because sometimes they have security cams in Star Wars.
There is security cameras outside of Ezra's cell, so they would see Callus walk off up and turn them off.
Doing the whole little switcheroo, so they could get to the bottom of it through just standard, by the book security checks. So... They fudge a little bit with all that stuff in it, but that's not anything new in Star Wars for sure.
The Act One makes sense because he turns off the cameras inside Ezra's jail cell before he walks into the jail cell.
Right, which would be sort of a standard thing maybe in Imperial sketchy land, you know? Turn those cameras off when we go into the cell. We don't want the Galactic Human Rights Organization coming down on us.
The second jail cell scene? He turns off the cameras outside the jail cell, so Callus is like, they would show Callus walking up to the cell before he turned them off. So I had the exact same thought. I didn't note it, but I did think that. So totally. I feel you.
That's all I really got.
All right, so you ready for my one tiny Thrawn gripe? I said I had a Thrawn criticism this episode.
I had the same gripe.
It is out of character that Thrawn would not notice that they deleted a planet. He would memorize that thing. He would know every planet. He would notice right away that something was wrong.
He would have had notes leading up to it. He would have been making patterns in his head of all those different planets there. And then as soon as he looked at it, he would have been like, something's off. What? That's not a planet, you know?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah. I that's my one Thrawn gripe. That's so out of character for him. Unless he noticed it and he just didn't say anything.
When they announced that plan, I was like, that's a dumb plan.
That is my one Thrawn gripe, because that Thrawn would have memorized that.
He would have been able
to tell right away. And he was like, oh, well, then I guess that was the planet their rebel base is on.
It's like elementary school kids going, let's go to the teacher's desk and fudge the results on the test score thing it for 10 times 5 equals 50. Let's change it to 40 so we get it right, as if the teacher wouldn't notice that 10 times 5 is 40 is wrong, you know? So, yeah.
I mean, that's my only Thrawn gripe, because and it should be a dead giveaway.
Well,
it's
a great gripe, Hope, and I hope it subverts your entire perception of Thrawn from now on.
Of course not. So, yeah. Of course it doesn't. But, like, it should also be a dead giveaway of their base, because if that's the planet they deleted, then that should be the planet they're on.
Exactly.
And so that should have been a dead giveaway of, like, oh, we'll go there. Hey, Rebels, what's up? But we know in later episodes that he still has to take an extra step to find Adelon.
See, if they really wanted to out-Thrawn Thrawn, they would have just deleted... They would have obviously deleted another planet... And added it in to make it look like they were trying to, like, leave that planet.
I mean, honestly, they should have just deleted the map.
Yeah, they should have just, like, deleted the map and blown up his whole ship. There you go.
No, because then Thrawn would be dead.
Yeah, that would have been a better plan.
No. Thrawn would be dead. We can't have that. So, yeah, like, that was my one Thrawn gripe, is that was so out of character for him. Oh, my next note is, I like the move that Callus does by reprogramming the security droids, because it's a very smart move, because he saw them earlier, he understood how they worked, and he was just like, let me roll with this punch, and he implemented it. And I also like that move because it also gained trust from Ezra. One of my favorite shots is that little shot of after Thrawn walks by, he kind of peeks his head out and then he goes back in. I like that entire sequence because he gets more of Ezra's trust, which is something that's very important at this stage between them. And it has a great shot. And I just like the whole entire scene of Callus just rewiring the robots. That's a really great scene.
Well, it's funny because in any situation like this, there's that moment that's the thing is, Ezra didn't need to say that, because there's just always going to be that moment where in some situation with a secret spy or something like that, where you're going to have to take the leap of faith. And that was that moment. You know, there really wasn't much Ezra could do at that point besides trust Callus. They'd worked to that point. So it was sort of inevitable. And Callus just sort of like nudged them through it so they could get through the process and get it done. It was well written.
Because I almost noted that too, is that initial moment at the end of Act 2 when they hear Thrawn's coming in, Ezra turns around and Kallus is gone. And there's probably that fear in him of, oh God, he left me, he betrayed me. And we see that he didn't. And so it's all really well just set up. My next note is, I love the move that Kallus does by staying behind, because he believes that he can do more good there. Because that's so incredibly brave. And he ends up proving his worth to Ezra and the other rebels. And it's incredibly brave because Kallus knows he's in a position that it's getting more and more dangerous, and he's probably going to get captured or killed. But he still chooses to stay behind. And it's a character-defining moment for Kallus, to somebody who used to do such terrible things, who is now willing to give up a chance of having his own life. And of course, we know, because we've seen the series, we know that Kallus is going to be okay. But I remember watching that scene for the first time going, oh God, like, Kallus is going to get himself killed. But it's such a good moment, and it's a character-defining moment for Agent Kallus. Oh my God, not once in this did I write Alexander Kallus!
Nope.
I didn't, how dare I?
What is up with that? Thrawn gotten his wife beater and got you all hot and bothered.
I know. I had the chance to write, we are all Alexander Kallus, and I didn't. Damn it. We are all Kallus. My next note is, I actually feel really bad for Lieutenant List. I feel so bad for him. Because all he wants to do is do his job and be good at it and be recognized for his work. And his one character flaw is...
Yeah, which is basically being a Nazi.
Well, yeah. But, like, his one character flaw
is... He wants to be such a good Nazi.
Okay, now you're ruining the note. Fuck you, Chris. I'm going to just finish what I wrote. His one character flaw is he's really gullible and believes everything Kallus says. Okay, Chris ruined the note. But I still feel bad for Lieutenant List. Fuck you, Chris. I hate you. I hate you sometimes. My last note is, since Chris ruined my previous note. God damn it, Chris. I'm thinking about it. Damn it. I hate you. Thank you for making me think about
things. Best Nazi they've ever seen.
I know. Thank you for...
All the other Nazis proud.
Thank you for making me think about things. Anyway, my last note is, which is my last big note, is something I really love about this episode. Something that I really love about Rebels. We talked about this in our Rebels Remembered episode, which Rebels does a really good job showing us all levels of the Empire and really shades those in. Because you have lower level officers like Lieutenant List, and Lieutenant List is trying to, like, one up his way to get higher in the ranks. And then you have Ahri there as the government official, Yularen is the CIA official, and then Thrawn is the high-ranking Navy officer. And I like how Rebels showcases the different levels of the Empire and how they interact with each other, and showing how they function in each of their roles. And it's one of the best parts of Star Wars Rebels, is how they shaded in and fleshed out the Empire for the audience so well.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. This episode might not be the best example. To me, the best example of this is season one, when you have Grande, Kallus, Tua, and Tarkin. That episode, the one where Ezra has to make a podcast and they have to break into the radio tower. That, to me, is the best example, because you actually really do see it from a military side, a force user side, a government side, and then Tarkin's the district manager. That is the best example still. But this just kind of adds on to more, because you still see how a lower ranking officer like List is trying to, like, prove his worth to higher ranking officers. And so it's just one of the things I love about Rebels, is how will they flush out the Empire. And I love it. All right, Chris, it's time for your favorite segment. You ready?
Oh, it's not the candy part yet, right? Okay, I guess this is my favorite segment.
Your other favorite segment. So it is time, guys, for Chris to have to say a nice thing about Thrawn. As a reminder, he's already used Thrawn's appearance of him being a nice-looking character when it comes to, like, making photos. And he's already used Thrawn has never killed a character that Chris likes. So now it's time for the new one. What's your nice thing about Thrawn you have to say?
Thrawn keeps a nice, neat, and tidy office.
So he's clean.
He's clean and organized.
He has the the Holy Grail from Indiana Jones.
And he's got a nice, you know, I mean, his office has a nice sense of feng shui.
Has a neat, tidy office and is organized and nice decorations.
That's like several things. So there. I'm generous.
Kind of the same thing. Eventually, you're going to have to actually talk about his character. I will get you to that point. I'll take it.
We'll see. I'm a slippery one.
Yay! Put in some applause here. Chris said a nice thing about Thrawn. Yay! I'm moving my hand back and forth like I'm waving a flag. Yay! All right, well, that's all I have for Through Imperial Eyes. Do you have anything else?
No. Are you ready to score it up?
I'm ready to score this puppy up, Chris.
I liked it, but it had Thrawn in it. It was a decent episode. 8.0. Not as fun for me as the Mandalore, last couple Mandalore episodes, but it was enjoyable.
All right. For me, this is one of my favorite episodes of Rebels. It's in my top 10. It is up there.
I can totally see that.
Well, I love this.
You got the good guy energy a couple episodes ago with Sabine training, where it had all your good guys doing their thing, and this one was your bad guy energy show.
I had to actually really think hard about how I was going to rank it, because the last two episodes were so good.
Technically good guy, but yeah. he's technically good guy, bad guy, so he's got a little, he's sort of walking the line for you right now, but.
Gray guy?
He's a bad guy with good guy energy for Hope. How about
he's
that?
He's a gray guy. words I wrote, Thrawn arms, oh my god. But as for the actual story of this episode, Kallus is really great, and it gets pretty emotional at times because you can see the mental strain that it takes on him for being a double agent. It's wonderful to see Yularen again. I actually, I didn't really get to say anything, but I actually have a really soft spot for Yularen. I love him in the Clone Wars. I love him in the Thrawn novel. I love him in Rebels. Like, I have a little bit of a soft spot for Admiral Yularen. I also love Ahri. Ahri didn't actually get to do much other than fight Rex, but it's still awesome because I love the Ahri versus Rex fight so much. I really feel for Lieutenant List. I love him. He's so stupid. I love how dumb List is. It's cute and it's adorable, and he is the big boy Nazi. Thanks, Chris. But I also really love that we get to see how the Empire works on all levels, and it's a really fun cat and mouse story. And it's one of my favorite, and a lot of it is biased. I love Thrawn, I love Kallus, I love Arinda, I love Yularen. I mean, a lot of this is biased, I will say up front, and I have to give it a 9.5 out of 10.
Yay, wow.
I know. I love this episode more than Legacy of Mandalore, which we had last week, which that's actually how I had to really think about it, because Legacy of Mandalore, I scored a 9, and Trial of the Darksaber, I scored a 10. But so much of this episode is just personal enjoyment. It's not like, I think Legacy of Mandalore is a better written story, but this one has just so much personal enjoyment that I've watched this episode so many times. I've watched this episode more than I've watched the
personal
other two.
Enjoyment is code for sweaty Thrawn and a wife beater.
Hell yeah. But that's really why I scored it. And like I said, it's so much of it is biases. But cause Legacy of Mandalore is a better
score is a bias. Pretty much a measure of your bias anyway. So, you know,
yeah.
Score it by bias. You know, I do.
Yeah. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page. This week, our feedback comes from Twitter and Facebook for our episode, the episode I can never pronounce correctly, the Wincathu job, I think that's right, a.k.a. the one with Hondo and Scrotum Face.
I almost think Wincathu because it's almost like Pikachu, so I doubt that's wrong. I bet you it is Wincathu, but I always think Wincathu.
Ha, that'd be cute, though. It is Wincathu, though, because that's how they said it in the episode.
If that's how they say it, then why doesn't my brain say it that way?
Huh. I don't know. What's wrong with your brain, Chris?
Oh, it's too late in the show. Too late in the show, Hope. All right. So we're going to Facebook first for some feedback on the Winkathoo job. And the first one comes, the first one and the only one from Facebook comes from Paul C. Kelly. Oh, yeah. If Star-Lord thought Thanos had a scrotum face, he never met Asmorgian. LOL. It's like two different kinds of scrotums, you know?
Yeah.
Asmorgian's more of a sad hanging
kind of
scrotum.
Like a low hanging fruit, while Thanos has definitely done his thigh exercises to make it nice and tight.
Thanos is hardened scrotum of a steroid abuser. All right.
Yeah.
When you're saying his name in the episode, I was hearing Willow screaming Val Kilmer's character name for some reason, but that was Mad Mardigan. I've still never seen that movie. It's on my list of shame.
Didn't we say that we were going to do a commentary of it one time?
We probably have, yeah. I would have to watch it before we did a commentary, so I wasn't just watching it through the commentary going, oh, that's
same
cool.
Same here. I will all say right. The next one that comes from Twitter, it didn't show up, and also this is an audio medium, so it's not like you guys could see it anyway. But Paul C. Kelly sends us one, and he sent us about 20 hearts in all different colors because we have our happy hearts and faces counts for Thrawn and Ahri. But the image, of course, didn't show up, and this is an audio medium. But just know it started because Paul sent us 20 hearts in a tweet. So that's where this started.
Paul fights robots with a wife beater on, too, so he's a lot like Thrawn. Okay, Paul C. Kelly said, just heard you were looking for hearts. LOL. Hope said, are these hearts for Thrawn or for Ahri? So I know how to list them. Man, I put a lot of evil into that one.
I know, right? I like it.
Paul says, missed that part of it? Let's do Thrawn. Smiley face. Sorry, Ahri. Hope says, I was hoping you would pick Thrawn just to piss off Chris. Tongue hanging out face.
And he did. I didn't prompt that at all. I was going to give Paul the choice of if it was for Thrawn or for Ahri. When I saw that he picked Thrawn, I was like, yes!
Now
our happy and heart space
count
is
that was my favorite part.
I'm down to 4.
See, I mixed our new batch and the old batch together. So
I've been keeping them separate.
Which is which, so... Grab one of your fours, and I will,
The Loacker?
You want to do the Loacker? I was hoping you would do the Loacker. I'm hungry. I'll eat this whole Loacker like it was my job, which it is!
Well, if
my
you don't
unpaid
know what
job,
we're doing,
but it's still a job.
If you don't know what we're doing, Chris hates American Kit Kat. So our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, which we talked a lot about earlier in this episode... sends us candy from all over the world to review.
Well,
Dario,
just
because
we were talking about porn, that's all.
Yeah. And the Loacker Napolitaner. It looks like a Kit Kat wafer thing.
It looks like
from
a Kit
Italy.
Kat, and it's got pictures of hazelnuts, so I figure there's going to be some hazelnut action in this.
And it comes from Italy. Thank you, Dario. Okay, how do I open this?
It does look kind of like a Kit Kat, a wide Kit Kat.
It's broken up in my thing. It has broken and melted. Oh, God, it's ripping. Oh, God. Okay, well, I'm just going to rip this package right in half because it is coming apart. All right, let me get one of these out of here.
Mine's fairly intact. It is good. It is basically a Kit Kat, but it's got hazelnut, creamy.
The wafer is bigger. It has a more
It's
wafer.
Like a double wide. It's like a double wide Kit Kat. With hazelnut cream in with the wafer.
Are there nuts in it?
Hazelnuts.
Mmm. Wow, that's really good. Dario, this is so good.
You can always tell hazelnuts are so light, you know? They're they're not a dense nut.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody likes dense nuts. Those are the Thanos nuts.
I was about to say... I was about to go there, too. I had too much waffle in my mouth. I couldn't say it. That was delicious. Where can I put this? Thank you, Dario. I hope you're staying safe. I hope you're all staying safe, listeners. We love you guys. Please stay safe and wash your hands out there. Well,
yep. Listen to podcasts and don't do anything else. That's my advice for the plague.
Well, that's all I have, and I have to super pee. So let's wrap this up, Chris.
All right. How are we going to wrap this up, Hope?
Where can people find you?
Oh, you can find me at tutufreaks.com. I'm such an asshole. How do we start this, Hope?
I'm just going to walk away and go pee in a minute.
You can find me at you can do it while I talk, but I'm going to talk real fast just to be a jerk. You can find me at 22freaks.com, or do you want me to give you some peeing time? I can slow it down a little bit.
No, we're fine. We're almost peeing.
I can Paul C. Kelly it up, you know. You can find me at 22freaks.com. That's our website where we post all our material, all our podcasts. And it is getting a redo, and we were just looking at some of the new work on the future page, and it's coming along.
It is coming along. Chris and me,
the first picture I saw was a picture of Anakin and Obi-Wan from one of the Clone Wars comics. So Clone Wars is figuring out at least in the sort of, you know, bookmarks that our web designer's putting in places for now. But
it really is looking nice, you guys. Chris sent me a little link last night, and I took a look at it. It's coming along.
A little more like it's 2020 instead of 2008. That's basically becoming very clear. Okay. Well, anyway, you can go there. You can see all our podcasts. You can sign up for our RSS feed, which you can also sign up for on iTunes if you're searching for Two True Freaks. We are also on Facebook. And we've got the Two True Freaks podcast on Facebook, which is basically where all our podcasters in our network post their podcasts. And we have the Two True Freaks Cantina, where all our podcasters and all our listeners and friends go to hang out and talk. We are also on Twitter. And our Twitter is run by the infamous Gene, the perpetual motion machine.
I don't know what a professional... Gene.
That's pretty much right. That's what... It's pretty much along the lines of... A perpetual motion machine is a machine that somehow feeds energy into itself and runs forever.
Isn't it theoretically
impossible.
Isn't it those balls that hit each other?
No, they slow down. They run out of energy. They use up energy every time they clack together.
Yeah.
Now, there's been, like the typical, like, perpetual motion machine picture you would see would be, like, somebody's patent where they come up with the idea where it looks like a Ferris wheel or something, but instead of a Ferris wheel, it's picking up water out of the thing and then dumping the water back in at the top, and the water runs down and back into the Ferris, you know, something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. You can look online. There's videos of perpetual motion machines that people have made that, you know, of throughout time. Yeah. Quote unquote perpetual motion machines, but they're not real perpetual motion machines like Gene, who is actually immortal. So there you go. That's why he's a perpetual motion machine, but don't tell anybody that we told you that about Gene. Don't tell anybody anything we tell you about Gene. So, what can they find you?
Okay. You can find me at Jacobs and Jedi on Twitter. I run our Twitter account. You can also find me at Hope Molinax on Twitter. I also have my website that I mentioned earlier called geekygirlexperience.com. Where I write all sorts of articles. I've been reviewing Clone Wars over there. I wrote a piece called The Queer Coding of Ahsoka Tano, which I'm super duper proud about. And I actually just did my first Star Wars piece about the Pixar movie Onward. And I'm going to start branching out to doing things other than Star Wars soon. I have several of those drafted. And I also write fanfiction over on Archive of Our Own under the name Chaos Lydia, where I have a Thrawn fanfiction and Aging Kallus fanfiction, which are both very fitting for this episode. And yeah, that's where you can find me. I'm actually really excited to watch next week's episode, because I've only seen Secret Cargo once. It's the one with Mon Mothma, and it's the only, I've only watched it once, so I'm actually really, really excited to watch this episode, because
I remember it played a little bit on Mon Mothma's character, you know, the character traits that she was showing in Rogue One, yeah.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, so I'm very excited to watch this. The episodes that I've only seen once, I tend to like better because I don't really remember them. And it's not like this episode with Through Imperial Eyes where I've watched it multiple times. Like, I could have probably written the review of From Imperial Eyes from memory because I've seen this episode so much. So
I've only seen them all once, and all I remember of the Mon Mothma one was thinking that, like, oh, okay, they're going like Rogue One, and they're making her a little more of a complicated character, you know?
Yeah.
I like that. That's all I remember.
Yeah. But, all right, you guys, we love you. Please stay safe out there. If you like us, share us. You know, we're all quarantined, so if you like what we do, you know, maybe suggest us to somebody. And as always, you know, I haven't checked our iTunes in a while, so if you have some time in this quarantine life, feel free to write us an iTunes review. It's been
all
a while since we
all you got is time, so get on that iTunes.
All right, you guys, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.